Episode 5 of Welcome to Level 7. I am Iron Man 2.
Welcome to Level 7, the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Welcome to Level 7. I am Ben Avery. I am one of two hosts who are here to walk through the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we wait for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I am here with my good friend and between Disney blogger, Walt Disney fanatic,
Daniel Butcher. Walt Disney thing is going to be important today.
Yes, it is. And I think that was a better introduction than our last episode.
I know. Well, I was, you know, when you were talking about waiting, so I was thinking maybe you were giving me a cue there. Just wait. Because last time I was just way too fast with stuff.
Yeah. Well, that was a good dramatic pause as we waited for you to announce yourself. And yeah, it worked. It worked good. I liked it.
You know, though, I will say this. You know, they said this would never happen.
But?
5 episodes.
Who said this would never happen?
Everyone.
I didn't say this.
Okay, nobody said it. Okay. But it sounded like something that, you know, people would say because, you know, I'm irresponsible like that.
Okay. So basically you're just talking right now.
Okay, maybe I thought we'd never make it to 5. There, are you happy?
I'm just hoping we make it through the summer. There's a long period of time between now and when this episode, or the first episode, will appear.
Well, when you said wait, I was thinking in my mind, do I have to wait? Because I don't want to.
Oh, man. I know. I've been looking for just any information about when the show will actually start. And right now, there is nothing. There are no dates announced or anything like that. That'll come when I think ABC... They haven't done their upfronts yet, but when they do, we'll get the dates. I know Fox and the CW have made some announcements about release dates and stuff like that. But yeah, Welcome to Level 7, or not Welcome, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Welcome to Level 7's here. We've already started. With Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., my best guess is that we're talking September 27th at the earliest for the pilot episode. That's the Tuesday of traditional... season starting. So that's my best guess.
And in Disney vernacular, that is fall.
Oh, yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's going to be a long wait. But we do have season 0 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so now we are watching episode 3 of season 0, or episodes 5 and 6, you could say, depending on how you want to look at things. But if you think about it, the Avengers movies, we have a season of material in those movies, if you put them all together. It's a British season or an HBO season, but it's a season.
Well, and I'll say this. There's plenty of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the next 2 movies we're going to talk about.
Plenty. Man. Yeah, and in one, it works great, in my opinion, and in the other, it doesn't work quite as well, in my opinion.
So
it might be because I'm watching it wrong.
Oh,
as has been pointed out to me, I think it was off air last episode when we were done. You said, and I'm going to show you how you're watching this movie wrong. I eagerly await finding out.
Let's just break into it. Well, so what movie are we watching?
We are watching Iron Man 2.
The best Iron Man movie out there.
Now, hold on. Even better than Iron Man 4? Iron Man 3? And wow. Iron Man 3, Avengers. This is the best Iron Man movie, really, Daniel?
Maybe. Daniel. Maybe I've been blinded. Maybe I hear the tones of a Sherman brother, and my heart just goes a certain direction.
Of a what?
A Sherman brother.
What's a Sherman brother?
What's a Sherman brother? Oh, my Lord.
I watched the movie wrong. What can I say?
watched the movie. Let's start talking about this thing.
Let's start talking about Iron Man 2. First of all, they did Iron Man 1. It was successful. And so as they're getting ready to gear up for the Avengers, what are they going to prep? Well, they prep Incredible Hulk, which we've talked about. And they're going to obviously prep the sequel to Iron Man because Iron Man did so well. And they're going to get, you know, Thor and Captain America. Iron Man 2 is the second one out of the gate. And what's it about, Daniel? What happens here? There's so much happening here.
Honestly, I don't really think there's that much happening here.
There's just a lot of little things going on. And I don't feel like it's a collective whole. I don't feel like we're getting a story. I feel like we're getting a setup. We're getting, you know, characters doing stuff, but not so much the story.
If this was Spider-Man 3, mm-hmm. I would buy that. I would. But I do think that we are getting a complete story from beginning to end here. And we even have settings that exist in both the beginning and the end. It's not like we have Vanko and then all of a sudden we throw in the Mandarin halfway through the movie. I think that this movie is very consistent from beginning to end. It is a complete arc. And as much as you've preached to me about Tony Stark character arcs, I think that this one's probably got a pretty good Tony Stark character arc compared to some other things that we've seen.
Okay. And I will say, by me saying that Iron Man 2 is one of the bottom, maybe even the bottom rung of the Avengers movies, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy Iron Man 2, but I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy the other ones. I've got problems with this movie.
I don't even know you.
You don't know me. You don't know me. You don't know anything about me.
All I know is that you
don't judge me, man.
Appreciate the awesomeness that is here.
Okay, so tell me about some of the awesomeness that I don't appreciate.
The awesomeness all begins and ends with the Stark Expo.
Okay.
So you are walking,
which is set up for Captain America.
No. It is not a setup for Captain America.
It is.
It's the heart and soul of this movie, because what you think when you sat down and watched this movie is you thought you were watching a Tony Stark superhero movie.
I did think I was watching a Tony Stark movie. Yes.
You're not.
I'm not. I know I'm not. I'm watching the Avengers setup.
No, you're not. You're watching a perfectly pulled off tribute to Walt Disney.
And see, I don't know anything about that.
Okay, so here's what you need to know.
Because here's what I think I'm watching. When I'm watching this movie, expecting a Tony Stark superhero movie, I'm actually seeing a movie about fathers and sons.
I get that.
That's what I'm seeing. And that's not a bad thing. But I'm also seeing a movie that's setting up things for Captain America, setting up things for Thor, and setting up things for the Avengers.
See, I don't understand how this is necessarily a setup for Captain America. Now, I understand that the start of earlier version of the Stark Expo shows up in Captain America,
but it's and
there for a brief glimmer.
And Howard Stark the himself. Howard
Stark, yes, that's in Captain America is not this Howard Stark.
What do you mean it's not this Howard Stark?
This Howard Stark is Walt Disney. The Howard Stark that we see in Captain America, completely different director, completely different writer. That is not this Howard Stark. This Howard Stark is Walter Elias Disney. And the way it's been pulled off and presented, it's absolutely perfect.
Okay, tell me how this is perfect, because I don't think anything else about this movie is what I would call perfect.
Okay, so we start with the Stark Expo.
Right.
So at the Stark Expo, which is held in Flushing Meadows, New York.
Mm-hmm.
That is also the location for the 1964 World's Fair. Okay. Which is, in effect, the real-life version of the Stark Expo. Because we find out with the Stark Expo that Howard Stark and Tony, with the present version, is inviting industry to come and display their wares. And internationally, relationships are being made. And people are meeting people. And networking is occurring. Just like what happened at the 1964 World's Fair.
Okay, and I'm with you there. I see that. Now, am I right? This is 1974, though?
Yeah, I believe it's 1974.
Yeah.
But again,
which stuck out because that's the year I was born.
it stuck out for me also because the year I was born. But the key for me is the fact that they're holding this in Flushing Meadows, just like the 64 World's Fair. And it's the 64 World's Fair that, for a Disney fan, is the most important piece. Because at the 1964 World's Fair, there's a few things you may have heard of. One's called the Ford Magic Skyway. Tell me how much you love the Ford Magic Skyway, Ben. You don't, because you've never actually seen it.
No, I haven't.
It's fine. It's okay. I can breathe.
I don't want your pity.
But you know what was there?
What was there?
Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. Have you heard of Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln?
I don't want your pity.
The answer is yes, you have. Come on.
How have I heard of it?
You have heard of it?
No, how? I don't think I've heard of it.
It sounds like an audio animatronic of Abraham Lincoln. Paid for by the state of Illinois. Currently a show still running at Disneyland.
Wait, so that's the same one?
It's not from the Disneyland? Same figure. They've updated the figure.
But it's the same, like, this show has been going.
It's the same basic show. It's had tweaks here and there, but the basics are still the same. Abraham Lincoln giving key speeches. They've updated some of the AV. They've updated the video. But again, 1964 World's Fair. This is where we begin to see this.
Now, did they take that one and use it?
They lifted it straight up and took it to Disneyland.
All right. So when did Disneyland come about?
1955. We'll get to that piece.
Okay.
Cool. What else was there? Okay, there's something you didn't know of, which was called Progress Land. At Progress Land, you had the Carousel of Progress, which was a spinning, rotating theater.
Where you went to when you turned 35 because it was time for you to
die. No.
And you go spinning up into the air, and then you have to run away because the light shines on your hand and the carousel.
Half of our audience don't even know who that movie is because they weren't even alive. Come on.
I'd say half of our audience doesn't know what that movie is because nobody knows about that movie anymore. But anyway, Logan's Run, look it up. It's a good movie. And
Carousel of Progress.
Interesting 70s TV show, too. Go ahead.
Carousel of Progress. They also picked it up and put it in Disneyland.
Really? Okay. Yes.
And actually, the theater for the Carousel of Progress is still there now at Disneyland. But that theater is now called Innoventions and has been horrible for years. Except this year, they've added to that theater a little something called the Iron Man Hall of Armor.
Interesting.
And
it all comes around full circle, just like a carousel.
So, exactly. And that has been a rumored location for where the Stark Expo could be in the future at Disneyland.
They're planning a Stark Expo.
Oh, it's been rumored.
Okay.
And it would be fantastic.
But
we're not done. The Carousel Progress was eventually picked up and moved to Walt Disney World, where it still runs today.
Walt Disney World being the one in California.
Yes.
Okay.
No, Walt Disney World, Florida.
Oh.
So moved from California to Florida. So it was in New York, moved to California, now it's moved to Florida and still running today.
Okay, all right.
Okay. The theme song for that was written by the Sherman Brothers. It was a song called There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. It's a great big beautiful tomorrow. It's one of the most beloved Disney songs of all time.
I've never heard it.
It's fantastic.
Is it as good as It's a Small World?
We'll get to that, too. But okay. Remember that name, the Sherman Brothers.
All right.
The last exhibit that Walt Disney put together for the 1964 World's Fair was, in fact, It's a Small World.
So that was – It's a Small World was at the World's Fair.
Yes. And then when they were
created by Disney for the World's Fair?
Created by Disney for the World's Fair.
Okay.
As a money raiser for UNICEF, paid for by Pepsi.
Okay.
Song written by the Sherman Brothers.
Sherman Brothers. Yet again. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Sherman Brothers. Now, I cannot believe that you've never heard of the Sherman Brothers.
I can't either. I mean, obviously.
The reason you need to know about the Sherman Brothers is because they wrote all of the music for Mary Poppins.
Okay, so I've heard the Sherman Brothers, Mary Poppins, It's a Small World, yeah. Okay.
So,
which I love Mary Poppins, one of the greatest movies ever. Okay.
Okay. Remember that.
I'm remembering them.
Sherman Brothers.
Sherman Brothers, they're right here.
Now, for Walt Disney history, the reason we care about the 1964 World's Fair is because it proved to Walt Disney that he could actually make a park on the East Coast, which would eventually become Walt Disney World. So without the 1964 World's Fair or the Stark Expo, there's no Walt Disney World.
I like how you snuck the Stark Expo in there, but...
But I'm not done.
Okay.
So if you look at all this imagery for all the past Stark Expos, all of it, it all looks like a Disney poster. It does. And if you look at Howard Stark when he's presenting his Stark Expo plan, you'll see posters behind him that look to be perfect matches for the sorts of things that you would find in the 60s and 70s from a Walt Disney world or a Disneyland attraction. You can see posters that look just like that. They have a perfect fit. There's even a poster that has a monorail that's dragging down from the beam, which is a traditional monorail style, unlike the monorails that Walt Disney World and Disneyland have, which is above the beam.
I will say I saw this. This I did see. And when he was doing his talking in the office with the maps behind him and the
you're
model
jumping
behind
ahead
him,
on me. I'm still just talking about the Stark Expo. Now, but I'm gonna give you the final piece. The final piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I gotta breathe.
Yeah.
Gotta breathe.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. So
our audience is ready.
Theme song. There's a theme song for the Stark Expo.
Yes, there is.
Called Make Way for Tomorrow. And it's played in pieces in the movie. And it's played in the ending credits.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by...
The Sherman Brothers?
Almost. 50%. It was written by Richard Sherman.
Okay.
Because by this time, Robert Sherman was living in London. And Robert Sherman has unfortunately passed away. But at this time, he was living in London. And he was painting, not writing music.
And he wrote this for Iron Man 2.
Yes. Richard Sherman was specifically... reached out to by Jon Favreau because he needed a song that would fit this sort of event. And the only person who could write something like that was a Sherman brother. Now, for the Sherman brothers, if you're really lucky, sometimes on Netflix you can find a documentary called The Boys.
The Boys.
The Boys. They have fascinating lives because they worked together, they're brothers, and in the end, they really couldn't stand each other.
So we will recommend that documentary then.
Oh, it is fantastic.
Okay, so
there's just that's just the expo. Can we talk about Howard Stark for a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about Howard Stark. But yeah, let's just talk about Howard Stark.
I'm trying to go fast. I know this is going to take forever because I'm so in love with it. Howard Stark. Okay.
Well, before you do, I do want to say one thing that I noticed when the other podcast that you're part of, the Sci-Fi Christian, they did a movie review of Iron Man 3. All right. And I'm now understanding this was the video review, a line that was thrown out as the five guys are standing there talking about Iron Man 3. I heard someone yell out, "Where's the Walt Disney love? Where's the connection to Walt Disney?" That would be you. Now I'm understanding far better why you were saying that in context of Iron Man 2. Okay.
Okay. So Howard Stark.
Howard Stark. Who. Wait, let's talk about Howard Stark, though. You're saying he's a different character.
I think he's a very, very different. Because in this version of Howard Stark that we're getting here... Now, here's the thing. In the MCU, he's the same character.
Yeah.
But he's being depicted in a very different way.
It's 30 years later, though.
You can argue it's the fact that it's 30 years later.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, Captain America is during World War II, mid-40s. And... The Stark Expo is 74, mid-70s, 30 years later.
And this, to me, is a Howard Stark who's a distinguished businessman, respected. The Howard Stark that we see in Captain America, don't want to get too spoilery on it, but he's a little bit more of what we would think of as Tony Stark's depiction in comic books because I'm pretty sure he drinks hard and parties well. And he's definitely much more of the super scientist sort of guy.
Yeah, and in the comic books that they used – the other stories from the comic books about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's more Iron Man-y. He's more Robert Downey Jr. especially when he's getting recruited, he's just, you know, in it for himself. I see, though, a 30-year gap between there where he's a changed man in between hard drinking, womanizing, and Walt Disney, I guess.
But so you said hard drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So he's Walt Disney.
Okay.
Now, I'm not trying to insinuate that Walt Disney was an alcoholic.
I would never say you're doing that.
But when you, because he wasn't, but when you see those cutaway scenes, the pieces that they throw away from his presentation, even when you see him drinking a small cocktail there, that's Walt Disney. Because Walt Disney was someone who drank, but he wasn't someone who drank on camera because he didn't want to give the impression that he was doing something that was immoral. And he was a family – he was in charge of a family entertainment business, and he couldn't necessarily be depicted all the time having a lot of alcohol. But he did drink. So even the cutaway scene where we see him, you know, the kid, he's not recording at the moment, and he's grabbing himself a drink, and he's fooling around and just kind of being funny, which Walt Disney did all the time, was just kind of throwing out funny voices and acting like he was a little strange, a little weird, a little fun. That's Walt Disney. That's the canon Walt Disney that you find in books and recollections of people who worked with him.
Okay. Now, I am reminded of Walt Disney in these films that we haven't even talked about the plot of this movie, but we're talking about Tony Stark's father giving Tony Stark, at the beginning of the movie, he's doing a new Stark Expo, kind of in honor of the old Stark Expo that his father did. And they use a clip from the 1974 Stark Expo where Howard Stark is talking about his expo in the 70s, but he's also – they're using that to talk about theirs in the 2000s. And so that's what we're talking about here. And when that came on, I was reminded of footage I've seen of Walt Disney – talking about Disneyland and what Disneyland is going to be. And just these are things I remember seeing in The Wonderful World of Disney, you know, on Sunday nights.
What it reminds me of specifically when I see that is the Epcot videos.
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm thinking of.
Because when he made the Epcot films, he was making them to try to sell his concept, which in many ways was a kind of Stark Expo because he was trying to bring industry together in Florida. And he had things like that looked like things you'd find at the Stark Expo. And really, that's what he was doing, just like Howard Stark is. He was making a pitch. Now, Walt Disney was making a pitch to taxpayers and government officials in Florida. But it's definitely the same sort of feel. The models look very similar.
Those models and pictures reminded me of Disneyland and of that 60s vibe. Of, you know, concept art and stuff like that, like you'd see on Popular Science or Popular Mechanics on those old magazines.
Yep. And some of our listeners may have seen part of that original model on the Wedway People Mover.
Maybe.
So at Walt Disney World.
Okay. See, I've only been to Disneyland in California.
Yeah, the model's not there anymore.
Oh.
It's because they moved it to World. But so you see, the moment this movie starts and I'm introduced to the Stark Expo, my attention, as you can tell, is completely focused on Iron Man 2.
So let me ask you this then. I'm assuming you know, you're seeing this movie for the first time, you're assuming, but have you found out in the interim, have you found out, is this intentional? Is Jon Favreau making a love letter to Walt Disney with this movie?
Jon Favreau is a huge Disney fan. So currently he is making one of the movies he's working on right at the moment is called Magic Kingdom and is all about what happens at Walt Disney World after dark and is rumored to be kind of a Night at the Museum type of field movie.
Oh, so this isn't the one where like the people are going in and filming stuff without permission and like filming bad stuff underneath?
No.
No, okay.
See, so if you've read some Disney fiction books, there's a group of books for kids called Kingdom Keepers, which is the same sort of idea that once the lights go off at Disney, that there's kind of a park within the park that comes alive and a struggle between good and evil. And I can tell you that those books have been out for almost a decade now, and there's been a lot of struggle back and forth between could you make something like that? And they're not using the Kingdom Keepers story per se. But I've been told, heard in the past in interviews that the Kingdom Keepers story would never happen because there's a very, very creepy scene, for example, where like the It's a Small World dolls come to life and chase kids.
No, they're creepy enough without coming to life.
Exactly. But I believe that Disney, one of the reasons they chose Favreau to do Magic Kingdom and to finally begin to talk about breaking into the area is because how he handled a Walt Disney-like figure in this movie.
Okay, but have you heard anything official from him?
I know that he's a Disney fan, and I have heard people say that he intentionally was tipping the hat to Walt Disney.
Okay. All right. And it seems like he's obviously tipping some hat to Disney here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's been handsomely rewarded for it.
Now, Iron Man wasn't at Disney yet, was it? No, this is Paramount, right?
It's Paramount. Now, Iron Man 2 is the bridge movie, because what happened with Iron Man 2 is Disney actually had to buy back the distribution rights from Paramount. So Iron Man 2 is after the sale, after the Marvel sale to Disney, and it's the first of the Marvel movies where you began to see merchandise in places like the Disney store or in the Disney parks.
Okay.
So if you go into a Disney store today, there's like usually an entire corner or wall that's dedicated to nothing but Marvel merchandise. I'm waiting for the day we see Star Wars right next to it.
Yes, that will be happening very soon.
So again, I know a lot of people complain about this movie. A lot of people don't like this movie. I have huge amounts of forgiveness for this movie because it's a love letter and it was written for me by another Disney fan.
Okay. All right. I'll give that to you. I'll give that to you. But I don't – you haven't convinced me that I'm watching this wrong. I mean, I'm watching this movie and I'm watching it as a movie. You know, I'm not the Disney fan.
It's a love letter.
I'm not the Disney fan. I can't appreciate the love letter if I'm not in love. You know?
Are we even allowed to speak to each other anymore?
I think we'll be okay.
Okay, we probably
we'll go to podcasting counseling after this.
We should probably stop talking about Walt Disney.
Yes. Let's move on. Let's actually talk about the movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So where are we at with Tony Stark at this point in time? He is Iron Man. Everyone knows he's Iron Man. And he's loving life, except for one thing. And that's his disease, right?
Tony's gonna die.
He's got some problems.
He doesn't look healthy.
What do you think? Is this a good place to start with him?
Absolutely.
I agree. I like this.
And the thing that I like about it is the fact that he knows that he is on a path to death. He has exhausted everything that he can possibly think of in order to save himself, has definitely led him to a place where all he does is make reckless and bad decisions.
Well, and this is how he handles the no-win scenario. Obviously, everyone's going to die, including Tony Stark. So what does he do? He puts himself in situations that he would not otherwise put himself in.
I mean, don't we all decide to just go race a Formula One car whenever we can?
Every time that I find out I'm going to die from poison from the technology that's keeping me alive, yep, that's exactly what I do.
And I like to party in armored small aircraft. I like to do that. Yeah. I like to drink a little alcohol, shoot off my weapons at my parties, crush watermelons.
So,
which part don't you believe? The fact that I have a small armored aircraft?
I don't believe any of that, but that mainly because you're such a Disney person that I think that you're not getting drunk with your suit. You're just drinking a little drink off to the side when the cameras aren't rolling, because you don't want people to think that you do anything wrong or bad.
I am somewhat of a family guy, just like my role model.
So the other thing he's saying, he's doing this Stark Expo similar to what his father did. He says that they've experienced the longest period of uninterrupted peace because
You're
of
welcome.
Him. He's
You're
saying
welcome.
It's his, it's all him that they have this longest period of uninterrupted peace. What does this mean? What does uninterrupted peace mean? Does that mean no war and no terrorist attacks?
You seem to get that feeling that, unlike the situation we have politically today, that the military is not actively deployed in any place, which is an interesting take when you look at it, considering the fact that he started in a place where we were deployed in a small war.
Yeah. Well, they definitely are changing the real world. You know, we start off Iron Man 1 in the real world, in a real place, doing, you know, things that are similar to what's going on in our world. We start Iron Man 2, and the world has changed because of what Iron Man has done.
Yeah, and I do want to say something real quick. When I say small world, that is a small war. That's a term for a war where it's not full-on engagement between two major powers, and it's an engagement in which you're not using all of your military resources. So you wouldn't, for example, be using nuclear weapons.
I don't want to
downgrade the war by saying it's a small war. It's just a term used when discussing different types of conflicts.
Well, it's definitely not like a world war.
Correct.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I have to think that the military is deployed, you know, in the Middle East still.
I just
want to know, what does this uninterrupted peace mean that he's talking about?
Apparently, the economy recovered in the MCU, and there's not $3.50 gas out there.
Well, maybe they still found a way to raise those prices, but.
But okay. He does seem pretty dang proud of himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And he's done all this, but he's going to die. And I'm wondering, I'm looking at him and thinking, I wonder if he's looking at things and saying, what's his legacy? He's leaving his legacy. He's doing all these things, the expo, helping the world with his armor, not letting people use his armor, but helping the world by himself using his armor. He's trying to leave a legacy. He has nothing else to leave behind. He has no children. He has, you know, up until then, he's lived a life of privilege and being spoiled and just taking what he wants. Is that the impression you're getting here, or?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's very concerned with his legacy. At one point, he even calls the Stark Expo the most important thing. So, I mean, he's definitely concerned with what he's going to leave behind, because he's convinced he will be left behind. He will be leaving very soon.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. He's facing the no-win scenario, and there is no Genesis planet for him. He's looked for it. He's looking for it, but...
Every possible combination.
Every possible combination he can come up with, but there are some out there that he can't. So let's talk then about his main nemesis in this installment. Ivan Vanko, Whiplash. Is he a worthy opponent?
I don't think they ever call him Whiplash.
Well, he has whips.
Yeah, but he
lashes them.
But I think the fact that I don't, in the top of my head, remember him ever being called Whiplash, again, shows us that we're trying to ground the MCU in the real world. Every villain, every hero doesn't just get a silly name.
No, and honestly, they don't want it. You know, that doesn't fit this universe. And that is one of my concerns about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is when they start pulling in characters we know and love and kind of grounding them. And doing this kind of Ivan Vanko thing with them, if they use Whiplash at all, it would have been a derogatory thing. I'd have to go back and rewatch it again, but it would be like, well, that's like, you know, Man of Steel, where like someone calls him Superman and says Superman. Yeah, that's what the guys are calling him.
But I think that will work in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because let's use the Taskmaster example. If you call him Taskmaster, I think everybody's going to be okay. I think the comic book fans are going to be fine.
Because it sounds like a title, not just a superhero name.
And the non-comic book fans will be fine because it's going to sound like a title. You're watching a show where you believe that it is a superhero show, so it would make sense to see a silly name there. But if you call him Tony Masters, I think that the non-comic book fans are going to be okay with that. And they may not necessarily search out who this Tony Masters is in the Marvel Universe. If they do, it's a win for Marvel. And then I think the comic book fans, they're probably going to be kind of sitting there on their couch smiling as they're thinking to themselves, they're not saying it, but it's Taskmaster.
Yeah, but I have to say, when it was happening in Smallville, I wasn't a big fan of it. But, you know, we'll see. I trust them. We'll see. It'll be something to complain about. I have a feeling we're going to be adoring things way too much. We need something to nerd rage about.
Now, so, when you think about Ivan, he really is the opposite of Tony.
Yes.
They're both very clearly geniuses. They both very much understand the technology. But they've been raised in different circumstances. They've been when you talk about fathers and sons, I think there's maybe even a chance they have a different relationships with their fathers, where the fact that Ivan might actually have had a closer relationship with his father.
I absolutely think you're right there.
Because I feel like a lot of the motivation that Ivan has is the fact that he's trying to redeem his father and bring his father back up to prominence, the one rival that got him, Howard Stark. Where for Tony, it takes a film that's, you know, over two decades old to even hear the words, "I'm proud of you."
Yes. Now, they both of their fathers are similar too, though, and we're friends. And both of their fathers give them the knowledge they need to fulfill their goals. In Tony's case, it's to survive and not die. And in Whiplash's case, or in Vanko's case, it's to get revenge. His father gives him knowledge and purpose, and then when he dies, gives him a reason to look to the heavens and shout no. Which, poor guy, shouting no like that to the heavens. Sad. I don't like it when people shout no to the heavens like that.
Are the heavens really going to listen?
No. That's so close to the beginning of the movie. It really bothers me because it is such a movie cliche. And it could have been, you can show that emotion without going to that cliche. And so this is where I start kind of turning against the movie a little bit. And I never become the movie's enemy, but I do turn against this movie. So that's that moment.
You're missing all the love.
This is in Russia. This is not.
I know, but you turned against the movie.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I missed all the Walt Disney. No, it's because I didn't know it. So.
It's a real shame.
Yeah.
Even my oldest child picked up on that.
I picked up on some of it, but I didn't. Well, we've already talked about that. Okay.
Okay. So. You probably don't play what Walt Disney World / Disneyland attraction am I thinking of in the car either.
So. No, I've never played that.
Yeah, it's a fun game. You should consider it.
But I also don't blog about Disney.
Good point. Good point. So again, Ivan's an opposite. Tony's answer to the better weapon is an armored aircraft. Ivan's answer is drones.
Yes. And which one's right? It's an interesting thing because it's that interesting dichotomy where with Ivan, you've got more, but the problem is there's a lot more collateral damage with the drones. But
he was able to control a lot more with the drones.
Yes, and he was able to do more with the drones. It's interesting, though, considering our current political state of affairs and state of warfare, where we are using drones, and it's an interesting thing. I'm trying to – okay, so what year was Iron Man 2?
Oh, you would ask me that off the top of my head. I thought we agreed we weren't doing research.
I thought we agreed to actually do it ahead of time.
Oh.
But Iron Man 2, you know, we're still – this is what, 5 years ago, 4 years ago?
2010.
Nice job. So I think some of the drone stuff was already happening, but it definitely is has a tie into the real world with all these – with all his armor being drones. The other thing he does, though, is the first thing he creates is the whips. And this is using Tony's technology, the technology that Tony's using, or similar technology, to go on the attack, to go on the offensive. Iron Man is armor, which is defensive. And he has, yeah, he can shoot things out of his hands and he can fly. But Iron Man's application of this technology is to protect and to...
But Ivan has no interest in protecting. He has a very clear goal.
And he has... Here's another mirror image. He also has a death wish. He does not care about putting himself in danger as long as he's going after what he's going after.
Agreed. And as he's walking down the racetrack, for example, he does not care what's going on around him.
Now, that is a great scene. That is a great scene.
I was going to say it again. Absolutely. It's good, fun action.
That pulls you right in. Yes. And now I'm not turning against the movie so much. But yeah, he doesn't care. He has a death wish. He has one goal in mind. And so he's similar to Tony in that way. The difference is Tony's dying and wants to live, and Vanko is living and wants Tony to die. So that's the dichotomy there.
And of course the other difference is Ivan has a bird and Tony doesn't.
But Tony has dummy.
Good point.
Tony gets to keep his pet even at the end of Iron Man 3, but
as you've reminded me way too many times.
What are you talking about way too many times? Like three times.
Okay, can we talk about the other four. Villain? Let's talk about the other villain.
All right. Justin Hammer. Oh, what an awesome actor. And what a perfect part.
Okay, when you say it, so all the time you talk about actors chewing the scenery.
Oh, man.
And I did feel like Sam Rockwell was just oozing through everything around him.
I did not realize how much of a fan of Sam Rockwell I was. I like Sam Rockwell in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I like Sam Rockwell in Moon. And I like Sam Rockwell in this movie. I might have seen him in other movies. I don't know. But I didn't put these all together until I saw Moon. And I'm like, who is this guy? Oh, he was in Iron Man 2? Who was he in Iron Man 2? And I'm watching it again. And I'm like, oh, there he is. Sam Rockwell. This is the man. He's great. He's perfect for this part. And yeah, choose the scenery up. Not as much as we found in Ang Lee's Hulk, where he's actually chewing scenery. But it's close.
Yeah, but you just cannot help but look at him when he's on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And otherwise, I mean, I feel like he's doing a fantastic job at being a sleazy businessman.
But he's also a mirror image of Tony Stark. He wants to be Tony Stark, and he can't be.
Because he's dumb.
Well, he's not dumb. He's a genius. He's not the greatest genius, and he makes some serious mistakes. Is it me, or did that armor kill someone?
It killed – dude, it had to have broken them.
It is the worst death in any Marvel movie, I think. Is that armor just twists backwards and like snaps a guy inside in half. It had to be. There had to be. If there's a person in there, that person was twisted in half. Ugh. I cringe when I saw it. But yeah,
it's painworthy.
Yeah. He wants to be Tony Stark. And it's awesome when he puts on his own display at the expo. He's trying to act like Tony Stark and get the response that Tony gets. And nothing's happening. And then Tony shows up.
And wrecks everything.
Yeah.
Too bad the mother-in-law doesn't work.
Now, they come back to that in the comic book with Rhodey.
And what happens?
Well, we'll talk about that later. But they do come back to that.
Okay.
So here we are. Justin Hammer, he's a great villain. These are both good foils, I think, for Tony. And when you're doing a second superhero movie, you want to bring in people who reflect your hero in negative ways. Tony Stark also tends to reflect the hero in negative ways just by being Tony Stark. But who are the positive people we have working with him?
Well, we got Pepper.
Pepper.
So has Pepper changed?
No. I'm going to say no.
See, I feel like Pepper's more confident.
I don't know. I feel like she's given more responsibility.
Maybe it's just the CEO title.
Yeah. No, she's doing more and has more responsibility, but I don't think that she as a person has changed. I don't see a character arc there.
Okay.
Things are happening to her, and she's handling them well, but she's not changing. And that's because, and this is my opinion, but I think that she's not changing because she doesn't need to. She starts Iron Man in a good place and enters Iron Man 2 in that same place.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm willing to buy it. I will. But I really do enjoy it at the scene where Happy walks in and uses the word boss, and mm-hmm. Tony thinks it's him, and it's Pepper, and Pepper knows it's Pepper.
Yeah, and Pepper puts Tony in his place often in this movie, and that's her job. That's Pepper's job, is to put Tony in his place and not just be a yes man to him or woman or whatever. Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, compared to Iron Man, she's got a lot she's got a lot less to do. Sure, she's on the racetrack. But it's not like she takes out the big villain at the end like she does in Iron Man.
Yeah. She's doing more, but it's not as important. Other than being there to reflect Iron Man, not to reflect Tony Stark the way the villains do, but to allow Tony to see himself and like I said, put him in his place. That's why she's there. And it's a thankless role. She does it well. And I like her well enough in this movie. She's just not a real standout.
And I guess we learned that her weakness, the way to take her out, her kryptonite, is strawberries.
Yes. Which is another great scene. And again, showing Tony. I love, though, that
it doesn't help that he's pointing out that he's growing because he knows they're related.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, though. He's saying, obviously, there's some growth here because, you know, I knew there had something to do. Yeah. It doesn't help his case, but it is classic Tony Stark.
Absolutely.
So, and his other ally, Rhodey.
We got new Rhodey.
We have new Rhodey.
So, new Rhodey, yay or nay?
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah, it takes you time, especially the first time I watched after I watch Iron Man, when I move to Iron Man 2, it still takes a little bit of time getting back to this new Rhodey. However, now with Iron Man 3, it was much easier to get back into it because we've seen this new Rhodey far more than we've seen the old Rhodey. So do you think he's a good foil for Tony then?
Absolutely. Because with the first Rhodey, including those cut scenes, we see a Rhodey who can be bullied by Tony, where this Rhodey is not bullied.
Now, do you think that's character arc stuff, or is this something the new actor is bringing? Because that's what I'm having a hard time reconciling is, you know, this is supposed to be the same character. Like you said with Howard Stark, it's two different actors. It's this Howard Stark is the guy from Mad Men, which I can't help thinking about Mad Men now when I see this movie. But yeah, so you've got this Rhodey now, and are these things that we're seeing because they're trying to draw a more confident character and a character who's growing? Or are these things that we're seeing because it's being played different by a different actor?
See, and I feel like this is the way Rhodey should have been in the first one. Again, you're not going to become a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. You're not going to be a top test pilot. You're not going to be that sort of guy without having some sort of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of backbone. This Rhodey is just that Rhodey is just backboneless. Or this Rhodey is strong and willing to stand up against Tony, even though he is his best friend, and he's not worried necessarily about will Tony still like me? I mean, even at the beginning with Senator Stein's hearing, he has no problem reading the words. It's not like he's, you know, trying to apologize. The words are there. They're mm-hmm. his. He does explain they're out of context. But he's clear. This is a Rhodey who's his own man.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm just trying to figure out how much of this difference is from the actor and how much of this is them maybe backing off from the performance and the characterization in the first movie and saying, we've got to change this guy because he has to be stronger to be able to stand up to Robert Downey Jr. You yeah. need...
And we even have the debate. Is he a sidekick?
Yes.
And he does not feel he's a sidekick.
He's not a sidekick.
And in the second one, in Iron Man 3, when we see more of him again, and we'll talk about this later, again, he's not a sidekick. He's more of a helper.
Yeah, well, it's more like, you know, I was going to say Batman and Superman. It's not. It's more like Batman and Green Arrow, you know, where you've got these two guys. Yes. They do similar things, you know, and they might go on adventures together. And Batman is obviously he's the lead. When you're going to go fight villains, Batman's going to be the guy who's going to, you know, he's lead because he's Batman, you know. And it's not Batman and Robin, though.
That first roadie is a hot mess, and this roadie is a respectable, strong, standing superhero.
Why? Okay.
You cannot deny he's not a hot mess.
I'm going to completely deny that. I don't even know what that means in this context here. Okay, all right. Yeah. So we agree they've taken a step in the right direction with Rhodey.
So here's the great debate. We've got Tony Stark who's making bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We got our party. We've got Rhodey showing up and taking the suit.
Yes.
Now, I think you and I have come out on different sides on this. Was the suit taken or was the suit given?
I feel like the suit was meant for Rhodey.
Yes.
It was meant for Rhodey to have and to use, but it was not meant for Rhodey to take. I don't think it was given yet. It was confiscated.
See, and I think it was given because I can't remember who. It might have been Jarvis that mentions that there are things built into the system to actually keep Rhodey from taking them, and that Tony could have turned those things on and actually kept Rhodey from taking the suit. So in my mind, Tony was giving him the suit by not turning on those security protocols that would keep him from being able to activate it.
But at the same time, yes, Tony let him take it, but I think that's different than giving it to him. I feel like I said, it was meant for Rhodey. Rhodey was going to have it and going to use it. And, you know, it was like imprinted for him or whatever. But I can't. Rhodey was out of line taking it. But then at the end of the movie, you have that whole scene where Rhodey's like, well, I'm going to have to keep this, you know. And again, Tony doesn't stop him.
No.
He doesn't stop him. And
I am absolutely convinced that that is his suit. Now, and I believe the prelude to Iron Man 3 talks about maybe getting the suit updated and modified for Rhodey specifically with some additions. But again, I think that Tony meant for him to have a suit.
Yes, totally agree with that.
He may not have meant for him to stick the mother-in-law, the mother-in-law on it.
No, it wasn't meant to be upgraded by the military. It wasn't meant for Hammer to come in and turn it into something more and turn it into War Machine. But yeah, it was meant for Rhodey. But I go back and forth about this. It bothered me that Rhodey just went off with it. And it's never specifically explicitly said that Tony was okay with that. It's just Tony, if he's not okay with something, he makes it known.
But does he even get a choice to make it not okay the way he's been behaving? He does have a small armored aircraft.
That's just it. You have a man who has created the weapon that has become the peacemaker for the entire world. And the only one that actually works. But who is it that has it in his hands? It's Tony Stark. This is the last guy. The last guy you'd want to have that much firepower.
Because he's just going to do the Gallagher with it.
He's just not a the Gallagher. he's not a responsible man. He's the last guy you want with that kind of firepower. And at the same time, he's the only guy who can have it. I'm okay with that. you know, that's a good storytelling element, is have, you know, he doesn't deserve to be Iron Man, but he can be Iron Man, and he grows into being Iron Man. I feel like that's the character arc that we have, is he's thrust into being a hero and he grows into it. Because he says clearly being a hero is not his kind of thing in the first movie. So should we talk about S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Oh, there's so much to talk about. So are you saying S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't work in this film?
I'm not saying S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't work in this film. I'm saying that there's a little bit too much convenience with what S.H.I.E.L.D. does in this film.
Okay.
Again,
I will calm down, and I will agree with you and say it feels like we're on a certain track. The movie's moving one direction. We do get to the party, and then all of a sudden when Nick Fury comes in, we kind of twist a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
will admit.
Okay, if this was a TV series, this is, you know, another episode now in the middle. You know, this is we had our episode about Vanko and the first fight, and then, you know, Tony getting drunk and fighting with Rhodey. And now, okay, episode 2 of this series. Okay, now we have the S.H.I.E.L.D. episode where S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up and does their thing. And then, okay, now we're going to go into, you know, act 3. The three-act structure that's common in film, it's very, very jarring here. Where, you know, Tony's self-discovery in act 2, it's just all of a sudden, yeah, we're changing tone, we're changing venue, we're changing, you know, we're adding in characters. If you haven't seen Iron Man, you don't know who Nick Fury is, but Nick Fury, all of a sudden, he's a major part of the story. All of a sudden, Coulson.
I mean, this is one of only two movies where we have a lot of Nick Fury.
Well, all of a sudden, in the middle of this movie, Nick Fury is, he's coming in, he's being Yoda. You know, he's, you know, going back to like the hero's journey kind of stuff. He's the mentor who's coming in, giving Tony Stark the tools he needs, the weapons he needs, the information he needs to overcome, you know, the primary villain at the end.
And you've got Coulson. The first time I sat down to it with it, I was shocked how much Nick Fury there was.
Yes.
I was expecting maybe this 30-second, you know, get out of the donut, because I think we saw the donut in the preview. But I did not expect, you know, a mission and delivery of items and history of a father all coming from Nick Fury.
And it's all very convenient. You did not need to have Nick Fury in this movie at all. The movie could have been told without Nick Fury. All of the things that Tony discovers, he could have discovered on his own within his own house or within his own company.
Or from Coulson,
you know.
Coulson could have delivered some of this.
Coulson comes in. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. comes in and just gives the keys to everything that Tony needs to overcome Vanko and overcome his own death and his own self-destruction. It all comes from S.H.I.E.L.D. It all comes from Nick Fury.
And Dad, one of the founders of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, but this is what I'm saying, though, is yes, it should. All this dad stuff had to happen. That needs to be there. All the dad stuff had to be there. But Tony should have discovered it. I feel like Tony shouldn't have had it handed to him by S.H.I.E.L.D. and by Nick Fury. That it should have been the kind of thing where that second act is Tony discovering these things and coming across these things. And this is my problem with this. This is just handed to Tony. Now, yeah, he does a little bit of discovery, and he figures out, oh, when I look at the Stark Expo, wow, look at that. It is the shape of, you know, this, you know, whatever element or whatever. He's discovering that, but I feel like there needs to be self-discovery here and not just, here it is on a platter, you know, take it.
But then the movie would be 4 hours.
No, it wouldn't be 4 hours. No, you just write this segment where it's Tony figuring things out. You know, that movie that my dad had, noticing something in there and then tracking down the other clips of the movie, you know, the outtakes, and realizing, oh, my dad left me this. This is left for me. And I'm just saying, when S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up, everything becomes very convenient, and I don't mind seeing Coulson again. Coulson is awesome.
He's the best.
He is. I mean, this is where we see how awesome Coulson really is. In the first movie, he was a joke, and in this movie, he's bad, man. I mean, he's confident. He knows his job. He's going
he's
to do
quipping.
It. What?
He's throwing out quips. We need you. I know. Not that much.
He's quipping to Tony Stark.
The ultimate quipper.
Again, putting Tony Stark in his place. He's and who else does that? You know, Pepper and a little bit Rhodey, but not quite.
But you need these other agents because Coulson, as we know, has to go to New Mexico.
Yeah, and again, so this is we're setting up Thor. How does Thor connect to this movie in any way other than, oh, I got a phone call from outside of this movie. I have to leave to go check this out, and then the post-credits thing. Thor doesn't fit in, and so this is shoehorned in to connect to Thor. It's not a bad thing, especially if you're looking at this as a series.
See, and this is why when we get to Iron Man 3, I think that end scene is completely wrong. But we'll get to that later.
You mean the post-credits scene?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we will
get to
that.
Because movies like this have shown us what these scenes are meant to do, which is to connect the pieces together, and Iron Man 3's doesn't connect.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, this is season zero. In some ways, right? We're watching season zero of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This is the Avengers, and it's set up for the Avengers. I understand why they had to do this. You have to get Black Widow in somewhere. So,
and think about this. So Black Widow, because we've moved out Coulson, we're leaving Black Widow there.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the Avengers, she's actually got big parts in three of these Avengers movies. When you consider Iron Man 2, her role in Avengers, and we know she's going to have a big role in Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yes. But again, and this is my problem, especially watching it the first time when I didn't know what was happening afterward. This movie is sidetracked and Tony Stark is minimized somewhat in his own self-discovery because of, you know, all these outside helpers coming in. It's set up for a bigger movie. I understand that. It's bringing in characters, you know, so that we can with Captain America, we need to know who Howard Stark is. All right. And
we need to see the shield.
And we need to see the shield.
And its ability to level pipes.
But yeah, anyway, I mean, this is where my problems with the movie come, is in this middle segment. And honestly, they're good things. I like Coulson, and in that segment, I really get to like him. I like Nick Fury, and in this segment, you get to see a lot of him. And we bring in Black Widow. We're introduced to her, and she is going to be a major character in the Avengers. So we're setting all this up, but it detracts from Tony's story. And so we are not watching Iron Man 2. We're watching Avengers 0. That's all.
All right, I'll calm down.
So, and again, I like it, but it's not perfect. I don't know how you could have done it differently, but it's not perfect. All right, so we talked about S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's see, Stark Expo, the disease.
Should we talk about the big battle and end this thing off?
Yeah. Oh, there is one line I wanted to bring up. We forgot Gary Shandling.
Senator Stern. Oh, Stern. Jeez, my handwriting.
I love his line. I'd like to leave the door unlocked when I leave the house, but this ain't Canada. So let's talk final battle then.
It's big. It's glorious. Spaceship Earth. Earth is involved at one point. Sorry, going back to Epcot.
Yeah.
Even
I can recognize that one.
There's a lot of unnecessary explosions, which I love.
It's definitely the step up from the first movie. First movie is Iron Man versus Iron Monger. Now we have a whole bunch of Iron Men. to deal with. And yeah, it's big, it's bad, it's good. And it means Avengers is going to have to step up if it's going to compete.
You mean like armies?
Yeah, there's going to have to be something like that. Maybe armies from space, yeah, or maybe another dimension. Yeah,
the numbers are going up.
Yeah, so if you're going to build from this point, you've got to go big. And it goes big. It goes very big. Again, you got the drone thing going on. And in the meantime, you've got Black Widow and I can't remember his name now. Hogan. Happy. It's Happy Hogan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
They're doing their thing, and you got some cute moments there.
Nice comedy relief.
Yeah, yeah. But again, you could have taken Black Widow out of this movie, and that whole segment right there didn't have to happen.
But you can't, because you need a female Avenger when you get to the Avengers, and I don't mean to sound insulting if this sounds like it's insulting when I say it. I don't think Black Widow is a strong enough character to carry her own movie.
Yeah, just the same way Hawkeye really isn't.
Yeah. So you need her because you need an Avengers team that is not white men over and over again.
You only need her in this movie if you're not going to introduce any new characters in Avengers, which is what they ended up doing. They didn't introduce any new characters in Avengers because they were all introduced for us. Loki introduced in Thor. Thor introduced in Thor. Captain America introduced in Captain America.
But I think that worked out for its story because they didn't have to waste time to introduce us to anybody.
Right, right. But I think you – yes. That's because they wasted the time here. That's what I'm saying. It all works, but I think it could have worked in other ways too. I think this could have been a stronger movie, and I don't think Avengers would have been a weaker movie if they had to introduce, say, Wasp or Black Widow.
Hey – she gets a better introduction in your mind, at least, than Hawkeye does.
Oh, absolutely. Which we'll talk about in next episode. Yeah. Definitely a better introduction. Because you actually see what she can do. She comes on the screen. She has these abilities. And she uses them. And you actually know this is an important character for this universe.
So Ben, do you now understand?
I understand what you're saying, and I understand what you're feeling. Yes. I don't feel it, but I understand it.
It makes me want to reach over to the bookshelf that's right next to me and grab my copy of Walt Disney, An American Portrait. Just put the words Howard Stark in every one of those spots.
And then you have an expanded universe book that lets you.
Soon I can get that published on Amazon. Yeah. With current trends.
Oh, my. With fan fiction, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's another story. Speaking of fan fiction, should I go there?
No, go ahead.
I'm not going to go there.
All right, let's not.
I'm not going to go there. That's a secret for another day.
All right.
But I am a professional comic book writer now, but I did do fan fiction back in the day. Every once in a while. All right, so what's next?
Should we talk about some news?
Let's talk about some news.
So here's what I want to talk about.
Okay.
So recently they held the Saturn Awards.
Mm-hmm. Very recently.
39th annual Saturn Awards. It's a geek victory of awards. Do you happen to know who won Best Supporting Actor?
Best Supporting Actor in like a science fiction type mm-hmm, film. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that it's someone connected to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You'd be correct, because it's Clark Gregg finally getting his due.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
That's fantastic.
So
I'm looking here at an article. It's up on Yahoo about the 5 geektastic things at the Saturn Awards. And this is their comment on Gregg and Coulson. The much beloved Coulson is popular in part due to the fact that he's a regular guy who's able to hold his own in an extraordinary setting, something that everyone, including Gregg himself, admires. Clearly, they've been listening to Welcome to Level 7.
Yes, because there's no other way that they could know this.
No way.
Hey, can I? Oh, keep going.
I'm glad to see that Yahoo's picking up on us, picking up on our trends.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to bring to the audience and to the culture.
Obviously, the Yahoo News writers listen.
And it's good to see Clark Gregg has got himself a statue for all the work he's done as Coulson. So yes. He does say, though, when asked about being a superhero, that I'm not a superhero, that it'd be a little implausible, and I don't want to eat chicken breasts and spend as much time in the gym as poor Chris Hemsworth does. And does anyone really want to eat that much chicken? I like chicken.
I do.
And here's his fun.
But I like it fried. I mean, I'm not eating that chicken that's going to, you know, really help me bulk up in the gym.
And proving that Clark Gregg is, in fact, funny. I wouldn't mind being Captain Marvel. Although there's a new Captain Marvel in the comics who's a lady alien, and she's hot. I'd be a lady alien, Captain Marvel.
There's one problem with that. Is he talking about the Marvel Captain Marvel?
I think he's talking about Danvers, who is, in fact, not an alien.
Not an alien at all. Although it is a fantastic book. That
talk about the now version?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Kelly Sue DeConnick, it is fantastic.
So I just finished reading that today.
Really?
And so this is going off on a tangent in a soapbox. I have read every graphic novel from the first year of the DC New 52,
mm-hmm.
and I did not like the female heroes and how they were handled. So I picked up the Captain Marvel Volume 1 from Marvel Now and thought that I would not enjoy it, and I found the story to be fantastic.
It is great. The art style is offbeat. The story is engaging. The character is likable. Yeah, I mean, this is just...
And see, maybe part of my problem with DC is I feel like with some of their female heroes, it's almost like they've said, well, she's a woman first, and then she's a hero. Where, because they really want you to know that it's a female.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the with Marvel, it feels like they're saying, we've got a hero, and she's female.
And she definitely is. Female. I mean, that's the thing. You're watching, or you're not watching, you're reading a book that's about a very a feminine character. It's a very likable character. She's well-written, well-drawn, well-rounded. I mean, it's just a good character.
I'll be honest. I've never been attracted to her as a character in the sense of, you know, being interested in her. And this actually the current volume actually made me interested, the latest one, Trade Volume 1, number 1.
See, I'm not interested in going back and reading Ms. Marvel. But one of the reasons I picked the book up is the costume change. Is they actually gave her a costume instead of a bathing suit with a sash. And so I'm like, oh, this looks like an interesting turning point here. They're doing something new with the character. They're doing this new costume. I'll support issue one, but I've bought every single issue since then. And they actually have built an event around her.
Which I'm shocked. If I hadn't finished that volume today of the trade, I would have been shocked about that. Because I just couldn't see how you could get enough interest. But the story around her is so good, and they've made her such an interesting character.
Yeah, it's great.
But she does not look like Coulson, and she's not a female alien.
She's definitely not an alien. Now, another Captain Marvel earlier, the Captain Marvel she got her powers from, maybe.
But he's a guy.
Yeah.
Which you could figure out when I say he.
There is that pronoun usage, yes.
All right. Let's talk about some feedback.
I put something on Facebook and said, our next episode is Iron Man 2. Do you have any comments you'd like to make about Iron Man 2? Do you have anything you'd like Daniel and Ben to address in their discussion? Join the conversation, is what I said. And Kobe Lee Radcliffe, who...
I don't know that guy.
Anyway, he says, I'm pretty sure that by now most people would consider this the worst Iron Man by far. But in my opinion, I thought it was pretty good. I would consider it the third on my list, but not by much. I thought Mickey Rourke wasn't that bad. And Sam Rockwell as Justin Hammer was pretty great. Robert Downey Jr. was obviously masterful again.
The Rock was not in this episode.
Why would you bring up The Rock if you don't know Kobe? Kobe, by the way, being a fan of The Rock, and Kobe also being from the other podcast, the sci-fi Christian that
I thought he was Daniel's on Strangers and Aliens.
He used to be on Strangers and Aliens, but they reclaimed him. So,
oh, tangents.
Thomas Holstey said, "I love Iron Man 2. It's a close second to Iron Man 1. Maybe even tops it. Everyone makes a big deal about Tony Stark saying, 'I am Iron Man,' at the end of the first film. But what good is that if there's no follow-up? This is the film about the aftermath. I think it might have been the most original script out of all superhero movies. This film fully explores the good and the bad of what would happen if a superhero told everyone the truth. Plus, there is a great fight between Tony and Rhodey. There's the Iron Man suitcase, which is the best idea for bringing a costume along that I've ever seen, which is also a classic thing from the comics, by the way. This is me putting that in. Thomas says, there is an amazing cameo by Agent Romanoff, so much better than Hawkeye's pointless appearance in Thor. Interesting comment. And there's Tony and Rhodey facing off against the drones in an epic battle. This movie is filled with awesome. Strangely, though, everyone talks about it as though watching it is akin to getting some incurable disease. So, well, I just think it's the bottom of the pile. If you have a bunch of great movies, this does not stack up as a great movie or as great of a movie as the other ones.
You know, I do understand it can be tough, and Monsters University did bring that to light for me, because I think Monsters University is a good movie. But when you say the best of Pixar, there's still six movies at least that it's buried on top, that it's buried under.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like the worst of the best. What, yeah. You know.
And as we've already discussed, Ang Lee is not in the MCU.
That would be a whole other discussion if we were trying to figure out where this stands against that. Yeah, so that's our feedback for this episode about Iron Man. But we do have some feedback that's just general feedback from – basically feedback actually to some of our comments in the other episodes, Daniel.
So not like Thunderbolt Ross feedback.
No, no. This is from someone who signs their email as Agent Expendable. But it's not – there's no space in there. So it's actually Agent Expendable, but it's spelled with an X. So
nice.
Yeah. Okay. He says, "Hi, guys. I've been looking around for a good Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast and finally found it in you. Thanks. I'm just finding the website and haven't read the non-podcast stuff, so forgive me if I tell you something you already knew. Number one, regarding how Coulson came back to life, the defibrillator and some alien med tech after camera cutaway scenario would be a perfectly legit comic book resurrection, and I don't see why everyone has such a problem with it. I point you to Fear Itself, Shattered Heroes, Captain America 7.1, in which Bucky, standing in as Captain America, gets killed on screen in battle doing heroic stuff. Cut to an evacuation plane and a still barely breathing Bucky being rushed off to a secret hospital to receive the remainder of original Fury's long life potion. Fury does this why? Because he needed to rally Steve back into being Captain America to win a war, and what would whip up his sense of duty more than thinking Bucky is dead? Bucky's cool with that because he's not frontline kind of guy and goes off to lead a quieter life, leaving most of the Avengers to think he's toast. Black Widow, who has a thing for Bucky, is there through the whole thing. Interestingly enough, Fury giving up his potion leads directly into the changeover to movie Fury, as later in the series, battle scars. Clark Gregg has said before the announcement of the show that he really, really wanted to be Coulson if he came back, and options like LMDs and the Vision would not make him or the fans happy. I think the secret hospital bed option is the best answer all around, and I personally hope to see a one-shot on the Iron Man 3 Blu-ray directed by Clark Gregg, revealing him in a hospital bed somewhere as Hawkeye and Widow are let in on the secret." And okay, we're going to go into some more feedback from Agent Expendable, but I do want to say I've heard that the one shot on the Iron Man 3 Blu-ray is actually going to be a scene from some characters in Captain America: Winter Soldier. That's what I've heard. I've heard that they shot something interesting that isn't for the movie.
But Sitwell's been in one shots before.
Yes.
It makes sense if he's there. And we know he's in Captain America, Winter Soldier. So.
And the interesting thing about those one-shots, they're so cool because, you know, I think those one-shots are almost like – they almost served as proof of concept for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a TV show.
I think you're right because, I mean, the funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer. I mean, I love that.
Yeah, which is that's a Coulson spotlight right there.
He carries that whole thing for 3 minutes.
Item 47 is, you know, that you get to see people doing office type stuff in the S.H.I.E.L.D. agency. And of course, we'll talk about those in a upcoming episode after Avengers, because we're going to do an episode just about the one shots and just talking about Coulson and how awesome Coulson is. Number two, I'm surprised how few podcasters and other posters I've seen on the internet have seen the UK show Torchwood, the first three seasons, not the fourth American season. No one has made comparisons to it when speculating what sort of show we will be getting. Seems clear to me that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be an American-flavored, superhero-seasoned version of that show. I have faith that the creators will give us the quality treatment of this model I'm quite happy with. So, Torchwood, Daniel, are you familiar with the show at all?
I've seen like two or three episodes.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it just, it was very, the ones I saw were very monster-centric, and I'm not a monster guy. So, but I can see how the concept, you know, Monster of the Week, Villain of the Week is very similar.
Yeah, I can see some big similarities there. And the reason Torchwood, the reason it didn't connect with me when thinking about this show is Torchwood rubbed me the wrong way. It's so dark and nihilistic, and it just isn't my type of thing. I recognize there's some good stuff there, but I had some real trouble when people were, you know, more upset about a alien whale dying than about, you know, human beings dying. It just, I had some problems with it, and I was watching that at the same time as I was watching Doctor Who, those episodes that happened right around the same time chronologically, and it just is such a different tone that I just wasn't ready for that. So, but I do see, yeah, I definitely can see the similarities there. And if it is a superhero version of that show, I just hope it doesn't go as dark as that show goes.
There you go.
So, number three from Agent Expendable, he says, I am hoping the rumors of Jeremy Renner wanting out are false, and would be inclined, not to mention hopeful, that they would give him more to do by being part of the TV show. Renner has done television, so he would possibly be willing to do it. It has the room to give his character something awesome to do, and I want much, much more of Renner/Hawkeye. I find Renner's struggles to be part of things kind of ironic, as Hawkeye repeatedly struggled with the, quote, always the bridesmaid, never the bride dynamic through most of his comic book run. And I have to say, yeah, I mean, that's the reason that he even got involved in the you know, Great Lakes Avengers, which I don't want to bring it up every episode. It's like that phrase that Daniel tends to say every episode. But I'm just saying that's why Hawkeye was off doing his own thing, because he never, you know, he at that point he didn't feel like he fit in, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, so Renner as a character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Daniel?
Well, I just don't see it happening. I don't see Renner going back to TV right now, because he's involved in so much. Because, you know, when you look at the franchises he's in, I mean, at this point, I'm pretty sure he's committed to the Avengers, to Mission Impossible, to Bourne.
Yeah. He's I'm got thinking a lot on his plate,
Star Wars, but... Hobbit, Halloween. Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, Star Trek. He's got some
Star Trek. Yeah. I mean, he'll
be playing Terminator in the next Terminator trilogy.
Well, only if it's a sidekick. So.
Oh, but absolutely. I mean,
he's got to be second rank, because the thing is when you think about Renner, actually, he's got a lot of bridesmaid, never the bride sort of characters in these films. But he's in so much right now, I can't see him going to TV.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as fun as Samuel L. Jackson, who I think would actually find it fun to participate.
Well, and Renner, definitely, he's looking at, okay, where's my career going? I think Jackson is kind of looking at, like, dude, my career's been pretty awesome. What can I do?
That's fun for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do it for scale if it's fun for me.
So then Agent Expendable closes out saying, thanks for the awesome company conversation while we wait. And to you, Agent Expendable, I say, no, thank you for the company and conversation while we wait.
Oh, I think we've got a good 3 hours in the can now at this point about Walt Disney.
Yeah, there was one other thing, and that was, if in the outline you wrote, someone's trying to move up a level.
Someone is definitely trying to move up a level because he made me smile this week.
Yeah, and this person is David Clements, who took the artwork from Dan Connor. Dan Connor drew the caricatures of Agent Daniel and Agent Ben that we use in a lot of our podcast stuff. And he did that pro bono. He did it just out of the kindness of his heart. We really appreciate that, and it was fun. Then David Clements comes along, takes those caricatures, and makes S.H.I.E.L.D. agent badges for us. Like you've seen going around with the characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Coulson, you know, his face is on there. It's that ID card. And it was cool. It was so much fun. So, and not expected. It may
very soon be my Facebook profile pic.
Yep. So, yeah, that's, I mean, appreciation obviously goes to Dan Connor for creating the caricatures, but then for David Clements, it was just kind of a fun surprise. He didn't tell us he was doing it. He just did it. And yeah, so, but David Clements, he's the guy who got Clark Gregg to retweet about our podcast. So, yeah.
At this point, he may be our marketing department.
I wanted to say that on our blog at welcometolevel7.com, we've started a new thing called the Fan Art Expo. And if you are an artist who has done anything to do with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we want to see it. And if we like it, we just might spotlight it on the blog. And that means you'll get mentioned on Twitter, on Facebook. We'll have links to, you know, your DeviantArt account or whatever, or your website. Just we want to hear, and we want to see especially Coulson stuff.
I want to see Coulson stuff, and I want to see, like, Nick Fury Jr. and Sr., like, fishing and throwing the ball around in the backyard.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be fun.
Oh.
And now if someone does that, Daniel.
Well, we're putting it up.
It goes back to you, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. They may be grown men, but they need to bond.
They do. They do. Everyone needs a dad to play catch with on a hot summer day. Glass of lemonade that you got to be careful you don't knock it over.
Make sure you don't hit each other in your matching eye patches.
That's true, because you don't have very good depth perception.
They are going to have to be careful when playing catch.
That said, I guess my final word is it's not a bad movie. It's just not the greatest. You got any final words for our audience, Daniel?
You know, the only thing I can think of at a time like this, when I get so angry at you like this, Ben, is if you try to escape or play any sort of games with me, I will tase you and watch Super Nanny while you drool into the carpet.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening.
It's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.